Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, November 8th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words in the upper left-hand corner that say Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also go to another point on that page and download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. If you click on the link, you can download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those, they can serve as a powerful tutorial for you to help you get the most benefit from these tools in the shortest amount of time possible. And we hope people do all of that soon and often because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they apply these tools in their life. And it also tends to promote comments, questions, answers, testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it will put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will be able to turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. And we appreciate when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service. And so please let us know how we can be of service to you as we continue to fill the airwaves with either talk about the tools or the way of mastery and its review or any topic that might be of service to you as a listener. If you can't be here live, if you're listening to this through the archives, please note that you can contact us through email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@yagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if you send us a comment, a question, an answer, or a testimonial, we'll address it on the show, and then as time allows, send you an email letting you know what day and time it was addressed on the show so you can go back in the archives and listen for yourself. It just reminds me that the archives are a very powerful tool, another resource made available through Michael and Jeannie's efforts. Some of the highlight shows have been curated out at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the picture of the microphone, it will let you scroll through the last more than 11 years of the archives and listen to the shows that are of interest. Or on the page, when you click on the Start Here link, there's a page that, a link where Jeannie has curated out some specialty shows, and we also have the resource of the MindShiftersAcademy.org website where I post these shows from this year and some highlights from previous years related to the worksheet process and the core work involved with the set of tools that Michael and Jeannie make available. So we encourage people to take advantage of those resources, whether it's the archives through whyagain.org or the archives made available through mindshiftersacademy.org. And we encourage people to give us feedback about that. What we've been doing since January 10th is working through the Way of Mastery, and we're doing a review of Lesson 27, where we left off yesterday. And this work, as I was talking about yesterday, if I had just stumbled into this work at Lesson 26 or Lesson 27 or Lesson 32, I might just throw the book away and never pick it up again. But having been eased into it, reading over and over again the various lessons from Lesson 1 through 12, so many times I've lost count of it, and then gradually moving on into Lessons 13 through 24. By the time I get here to the later lessons in the Way of Knowing, some of these statements that would have struck me as absolutely ludicrous a number of years ago, they start to stir curiosity in me. They start to stir deeper understanding in me. And there's, you know, one of the lessons is titled, I Need Do Nothing. And in this work yesterday we were reading where it says, here we begin to touch upon the essence of my teaching, quote, I need do nothing. And the text goes on and says, this is not a passive state of just accepting the fact that, well, I need do nothing, so I'll just show up and follow my impulses and not think too deeply or wonder what I'm doing. And I really don't need to do anything since none of this matters. That is not it at all. The teaching, I need do nothing, means that I quite actively begin to learn and master the art of allowance, the art of I need do nothing. To allow that voice within me that is eternally connected to my source. You might call it God, light, love, Holy Spirit, the great comforter. What you name it doesn't matter. But you allow that source and that voice from that source to be the vehicle through which you receive your guidance. So it's not that you don't do anything. It's that you don't act from the impulse of the ego and your woundedness and your unproductive cross-generational family patterns, and you don't act from greed or guilt or shame. You act from the voice for love. You let it be the source of the impulse that gives you an urge to think and act and move and do differently. So the text says specifically, it means quite actively to learn and master the art of, quote, you need to do nothing, close quotes. And you learn to master that to find the spaciousness within you in which you are willing to allow that voice within you that is eternally connected to your source to be the vehicle through which you receive your guidance in the pure recognition that you have no purpose except for the extension of love, capital L, love. The text goes on. It is not your purpose to survive as a body mind. It is not your purpose to keep the same house that you've had for the last 20 years. It is not your purpose to be in a relationship with this person or that person for the entirety of the life of the body mind. It is not your purpose to accomplish great things. It is not your purpose to be wealthy. It is not your purpose to do anything except to be that conduit through which capital L love extends itself. Now, I know I've had people have a reaction, a very strong reaction to this in the past. There are some people that talk about commitment and keeping commitments at all costs, and Dr. Michael Rice has a whole talk he does about how we need to heal the pattern of leaving relationships, leaving jobs, leaving through death. Even death itself is a leaving, and he talks about we should be about healing that. And sometimes when people are buying into thoughts like that, when they hear something like, it is not your purpose to stay in a relationship with this person or that person for the entirety of your life, of your body, mind, they might get a very strong negative reaction and think it's related to these words. Please understand, there's nothing here that says you need to change relationships every so often. There's nothing here that says it's wrong to be in a relationship with the same person for the rest of your life. This teaching is simply saying that is not the sole purpose, the core purpose for your being here. It's like Kay Finley would say, be a good householder, but establish first the first excellence, which is this clear, conscious relationship with your source, with your true source of your being, with your creator, etc., whatever you want to call it, because from that, everything else flows. And this book, in an earlier lesson, said, the only relationship in your life that has any value is your relationship with your creator. Not because nothing else has any value at all, but because all the rest of those values will be infused by, will be directed from, will be awakened and enlivened by your relationship with your source, with your creator. This text goes on and says, as you come truly to allow love, capital L love, to be your greatest beloved, as you set aside all other ideas, as you set aside the idea of the need to hold on to the house or the need to have certain dollars in the bank, the need to have certain people in your life, as you come to see that all of that is part of the world of illusion, as you come to have honor for, I'm using the word honor, instead of love, you have honor for capital L love, then you will come to see that you yourself are that energy of love and creation. Then you will honor yourself. For you are love, the energy of creation expressing in form, and only this. And as you come to honor love as your beloved more and more, you will discover that you are guided on a path of miracles in which more power seems to be getting extended through you. You will begin to witness that the universe seems to support you more and more in ways you could have never imagined. Out of that, you might indeed see the life of the body-mind changing. The car you drive, the home you live in, the quality of the belongings that come into your life. Yet, you will be unattached to these things, for you will not see them as ends in themselves. But you will see them merely as the proof that the great wisdom of capital L love that underlies all things, that wisdom is connecting you to new forms and new contexts because it knows that now it, that energy of love and creation, can flow through you more powerfully, more certainly, more maturely, and more wisely. Therefore, seek not to improve your life by adding even one cubit unto your stature, but rather seek to improve your life by realizing your true nature as love. How do you do that? By recognizing that in each moment you are in the right place at the right time. This is the moment in which love can be remembered, can be restored, can be extended. This is the moment in which you can decide to listen only to the voice within you that knows how to extend love. Beloved friends, in the way of knowing, the illusion that there is something to seek vanishes, and the mind is liberated. It is so liberated that it knows that as long as it chooses love, as long as it follows the mysterious, quiet voice within its own heart, that the choices it makes, the decisions it embraces, the actions it takes, and the thoughts that it thinks cannot help but serve it in furthering the awakening of everyone and everything. So perfect is the love, capital L love, that embraces the whole of creation, the Creator itself, God, light, love, all that is. You've heard me say unto you many times that wherever you know a fearful thought, it can only mean that you are not thinking, quote, rightly, close quotes. That is, you are not thinking with the mind of the Creator, for the Creator is but love. If $1 million were to come to you as Christ, you would say, this must be the perfect experience for me now. How can I extend love in this moment? And if in the next day your wallet is perfectly empty, the enlightened mind of Christ says, this must be the perfect event for me to be experiencing now. How can I extend love in this moment? The changing can never be the source of peace. Whatever it is that changes cannot be the source of peace. The world of form, whether dollars in the bank, houses, cars, people, friends, lovers, pets, plants, and all the rest, that can never be the source of perfect freedom. These things arise and pass away and are like ephemeral shadows, wisps of foam dancing in an ocean. When the mind becomes identified with the form, that mind suffers. When the mind is liberated from attachment to form, it is free. For it is identified only with content, or simply the reality of capital L love. In any given moment, you have the power within you to experience the reality of love, unobstructed, unmediated, now, without need of magical means, without need for the universe to arrange itself in any certain way whatsoever. In any given condition, you have within yourself the power to decide to literally feel and experience love. Love, or the experience of it, is a decision. It is not something earned, and it is not something created. It is that which is eternally present now as the very identity of your being, the very life and existence of your being. And every time I read this, I think of this book by Pierre Pratervan, Messages of Life from Death Row. Here's a person who's in death row for something he didn't do. His name is Roger McGowan. And he says, love is the fundamental law of the universe. It is the reply to every situation. It's our reason for existing. It's the essence of what we are. Love is easy. Hate is the difficult role to play. He also says, everything that happens in life is an opportunity to learn. Life is a school of higher learning. He also says, we can refuse to be victims, and we can take total responsibility for our lives. Even happiness is a choice to be made, whatever the circumstances of one's existence. This is coming from somebody who's existing in a 6-foot by 6-foot by 10-foot prison cell on death row in Texas, where he's being actively abused by the guards on a regular basis. He also says, everyone creates their own reality essentially through their way of looking at and interpreting events, people, and situations. That's just in the beginning of the book, Messages of Life from Death Row. Here's The Way of Mastery, page 318, part of the review of Lesson 27, the bottom paragraph, last two paragraphs. In any given moment, you have the power within you to experience the reality of love, unobstructed, unmediated, now. Without the need of magical means, without the need for the universe to arrange itself in any way, any certain way whatsoever, nothing needs to change. In any given moment, you have the power within you to experience the actuality of love. In any given condition, you have within yourself the power to decide to literally feel and experience this energy of creation, this energy of love. Love, or the experience of it, is a decision. It is not something earned. It is not something created. It is that which is eternally present now, as the very identity of your being, the very life and existence of your being. And the text goes on and says, once I said to my beloved brother, quote, merely stand with the arms outstretched and the palms up. Open the heart deeply and ask whatsoever you will, and it shall be given to you. But ask as the awakened Christ, asking from that place that knows only love is real. Close quotes. So I suggest that to you here. Therefore, take just a minute right now. Stand wherever you are with your arms outstretched and your palms turned heavenward. Think about your own heart for just a moment and simply ask to feel and know the reality of love's presence. Breathe it into your heart. Open the cells of the body. Open the mind and simply receive what is available. Good. Now you can allow yourself to sit down again if you wish. If you think you did not get it, you're simply fooling yourself. It requires only this. Next section is titled Daily Meditations and Exercises. We then give you this as a meditation to do in the way of knowing, at least once a day. Arise from your chairs and stand with your arms outstretched and the palms up and simply say, quote, I open and receive the reality of love for myself now, close quotes. You see, self-love is the pathway to perfect peace. Self-love opens all the doors. Self-love dissolves every illusion. I'm not speaking for love of the illusions of the egoic mind with which you become identified. I'm not saying that you should say, I love myself because I have X amount of dollars in the bank, or I love myself because I have a wonderful husband or wife, or I love myself because I have a great dog. No. I have this energy of love in me, which is my true nature. I am love. I honor myself. That capital S self that is beyond time is that self from which the body has emerged. It is consciousness. Whenever you are in doubt, whenever your energy seems to have dropped, try a dose of celebrating. A simple dose of celebrating that you are in a perfect universe and you abide as love. The very fact that you have a body that has emerged out of consciousness in order to be used to extend only love, that is pretty miraculous. And you are free to celebrate that simple, essential truth in any moment. And then ask, who can I extend love to now? How can I experience love now? It's all much simpler than you think. In the way of knowing, there is knowing. If that statement seems puzzling to you, contemplate it as a meditation. Quote, in the way of knowing, there is knowing. Close quotes. There is no more powerful state of consciousness to act from than the state of knowing. For indeed, beloved friends, if you truly accepted yourself as Christ, you would know that you could not fail. And if you could not fail, what would you do with your time? If you knew you could not possibly fail, that the universe will support you completely at all times as you choose only to act, to do, to think in a way that extends love, would you be living where you're currently living? Would you be doing with your time what you are currently doing with your time? Many of you have answered no, because you think you must survive first in order to find a way to teach only love. In the way of knowing, the Christ mind recognizes it has no purpose whatsoever except to extend love. The body mind need not survive more than the next moment. If in that next moment you have extended love and your guidance is time to be beamed up, so be it. Those that know that only love is real are not concerned with what they eat and what they drink, for these things come into the body and leave through the body. They are concerned only with whether or not that which they consume for the sake of the body was consumed in love. For love is what allows the transmutation of anything that comes into the physical system and allows it to be turned into that which supports the energetic wholeness of the physical system itself. It's far greater to have a bottle of scotch for breakfast in a state of total Christed love than it is to have 9,000 vitamins with one tiny little fearful thought. So that is something for you to think about. For you see, it is fear that causes you to be unable to digest what you place in the body. The body of the emotions or the body of the mind. Fear is what causes stress in the subtle system of the body and the subtle non-physical bodies, the emotional body, the mental body, and the causal body. What causes the greatest problem is your refusal to digest what you have taken in. Just as food is a physical substance taken into the body, an experience of any kind is a food that's been called to the soul. Anything that arises that cannot pass through you because of your unwillingness to embrace it with love and to feel it completely, that will cause indigestion. Indigestion of the physical, emotional, mental, and causal beings or bodies. Therefore, beloved friends, learn to digest all things in love. Learn to digest the traffic jam in love. Learn to digest the dying of a pet in love. Learn to digest an apple in love. Learn to digest a hurtful thought in love. Learn to digest a misperception that there is something wrong with the world around you and digest it in love. Transform all things by the power of your only reality. Now, I want to ask of you, what is it that you have refused to digest in this one incarnation? Was it unfairness bestowed upon you by your mother or father? Was it the bad break at the office in which you got passed up for promotion? What is it in your life that remains undigested, unallowed, unaccepted, unblessed, untrusted? There, something has just come to your mind. Trust it. Stay with that one thought, that one picture, that one memory, for it has arisen in the conscious mind to be healed and transformed now. Bring your attention to it in this very moment. Look upon it, breathe with the body, and simply say with the mind, quote, I choose now to fully digest this by bringing love to it, by actually loving the event just as it was, extending love to the picture, to the memory, to the thought, just as it is. If you wish, you can stand with your arms out at your side and your palms turned heavenward and receive the love that transmutes all things. Breathe that love. Feel that love in and through that picture, that memory, that feeling. Whatever it is that is occurring for you, do that until it literally dissolves. If you do not feel that happening, even in your body, there is a part of you that is resisting letting go of what has been undigested. If that is the case, you need to ask yourself, quote, why do I need to uphold my illusory perception about this event? What in me is committed to withholding my love? Close quotes. We would highly suggest that you spend some time each day asking the same question. Here's the question. What is it that I have not been willing to digest about this life and about this world? where am I refusing to bring my love? Close quotes. Is it to your government? Is it to your Internal Revenue Service? Is it to the mate? Is it to the children? Is it to the pet? Is it to the school system? What is it that you have refused to bring your love to? For the greatest joy in life is to be the lover of life. The greatest joy of life is to extend love in each moment. For as you extend love, you experience love. Therefore, do unto others what you would have done unto yourself. And is that not to be loved? When you choose to extend love in any given moment, you are the one who gets to receive the benefits of that energy first, of that love first. It is an immediate experience, and it cannot be taken away from you. You are free to, quote, juice yourself, close quotes, with that feeling of the energy of love extending through you anytime you want by choosing only to extend love, to tap into your true nature and extend it. In any given condition, you are the presence of that one to whom all power under heaven and earth has been given. Not just to extend love as a duty, for it is not a duty. It is a pleasure. It is the supreme pleasure that can be experienced in the depth of any mind, whether you happen to be in the world of space and time, or like me, you happen to be out of it. You are the one that can experience love and let your cup overflow. You are the one who can enjoy each and every moment, regardless of the conditions. For the conditions are only the interpretations of the egoic mind. All events are neutral. They are there for you to extend love to, so that you might experience love. That is really how simple it is. It has always been that way, and it will never change. You are love. You can extend love. The world can be the reflection of your love extending. Let each moment, then, find you in the simple, quiet, inner enjoyment that comes from the decision to extend love. Extend love in the taking out of the garbage. Extend love in the rain as it hits the windows. Extend love to the crying of the child. Extend love, extend love, extend love. Love embraces all things. Love allows all things. Love trusts all things. And therefore, love transcends all things. That is the power that abides within you when you finally choose to be that one who knows. Look well then this day and seize this day. Where can you simply change your mind and bring love to something that you've been withdrawing love from? For example, quote, well, I've got to go to the office, close quotes. No, you do not. You are choosing to go to the office. You might as well extend love to it, through it, as you do it. Where, beloved friends, are you being presented with opportunities to experience love coursing through every cell of your being this day? What can prevent you from experiencing love if it is not but your own decision? For in the way of knowing, the liberated mind of Christ knows this, quote, there is nothing outside of me, close quotes. And with that, peace be unto you always, O holy child of Creator. Amen. So what does it mean? There is nothing outside of me. This consciousness that allows me to have an experience of being alive is connected to all consciousness. And it has said over and over, it's not that there is no energy outside of you. It is simply that your experience of being separate from it is a creation of the way you interpret and respond to it. The essence of life is the essence of you. The essence of that which gave rise to you is creation itself. The essence of your awareness of yourself in your conscious mind is that field of consciousness in which everything that you experience is arising. So we had somebody call in a while back and ask about, what about this Course in Miracles group where people say there is nothing, there, it doesn't matter what I do because nothing is real and there's nothing outside of me. Well, at one level of scale, that might be true. You might be reading here in the last passage of Lesson 27 where it says, quote, there is nothing outside of me. And yet, at another level of scale, it is not saying there is nothing that is real. It's saying that the reality that I experience is of my own creation because I'm part of the creation. I'm part of the flow of creation into form. And it is very important, as it said earlier in this chapter, for me to awaken and deepen into the knowing that I need do nothing. It means quite actively to learn and master the art of the phrase, quote, you need do nothing, to find that spaciousness within you in which you are willing to allow that voice within you that is eternally connected to your source to be the vehicle through which you receive your guidance. We're going to have guidance. We're going to have impulses. We're going to have desire. There will be egoic desire, and there can be the desire which is the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through me in each moment. Which of these will I opt to follow? This work is suggesting that we learn to tune into the voice of the Creator, the voice of the Christ mind, the voice of the Holy Spirit, the Great Comforter, and allow that to be the energy which gives rise to our impulse for action, for speech, etc. So when it says there is nothing outside of me on the last page of this lesson, it doesn't mean there is nothing. It means I'm connected to my source and always will be, and everything arises within that field of energy that we call consciousness. And the purpose for my having awareness and being here can be chosen by me to simply be the extension of that energy, the good, the holy, and the beautiful, the extension of loving energy, respectful energy, compassionate energy, allowing energy, trusting energy, embracing energy, which is what creative energy itself always does. Love allows all things, love trusts all things, love embraces all things, and thereby transcends all things. In Lesson 27, it says, you're being invited to put this into practice in your life. Imagine a business person sitting down to negotiate the closing of a deal who goes to that part of the mind that is sane, the sane part of your mind, the part that knows that it's part of creation, the part that knows that it didn't create itself, the part that can tap into the guidance of a higher wisdom, the Great Comforter or the Holy Spirit or the Christ mind, whatever you want to call it. It goes to that part of the mind and asks, what price should I place upon this land that I'm about to sell to this other corporation? Now, the accountants and the realtors have given the value of the property at over $1 million. But the wisdom of love itself, of creation itself, of the Great Comforter, the Holy Spirit, comes through and says, ask for $250,000. Ask for just a quarter of what it's worth and ask that another quarter of it be donated to a certain charity that I'll direct you towards. And in the world of materiality, the world of the physical mind, that's insane. No one would ever take a property that's valued at over $1 million and sell it for half of it or less than half of it and only take a quarter of it for themselves and have another quarter of it be donated to a charity. And to put all the rationalizations about, well, this is a corporation and they're going to take that money and do horrible things. But if I get the guidance, if I'm living the way this book invites us to live, and if I get that guidance, I don't hesitate. I follow the guidance. Because I've seen past the insanity of the world that says the only way to have things is possess things. And I've seen that the way of knowing is showing me that the only way to have is to give. Giving and receiving are part of a flow of energy. So, there's our finishing of the review of Lessons 26 and Lessons 27. Tomorrow we'll push ahead a little bit into Lesson 28. We have plenty of time. We have a little over 12 or 13 minutes for comments, questions, answers. 563-999-3581. Plenty of people on the call. What are you thinking? How is this landing for you? Were you here yesterday when I was talking about how if I read some of the things from Lesson 32 or Lesson 28 without having really worked with the first 25 or 26 lessons over and over again, if I hadn't really gotten something deep shifting in me from the first 12 lessons, and then I read some of these later statements, I probably would have thrown the book away and never picked it up again. Even though I am a person who gave away his first car, even though I was raised by parents who were generous, even though I've had that generosity bone in me, I still probably would have run from this book if I'd read that last paragraph about selling a property that's worth over $1 million for $250,000. Without the foundation, without this practice, without strengthening an awareness that there's more going on here than just what the five senses can show me or guide me to, I probably would have run from The Way of Knowing if that was the first book I'd been exposed to. Just as I was reading the autobiography of a yogi a number of years ago and was thoroughly enjoying it until I read some part of it that I just got a knot in the pit of my stomach. I felt absolutely nauseous, literally physically nauseous, and I had to put the book down. Now, because of my work with the Reality Management Worksheet and the EFT tapping and the breath work that Michael and Jeannie have introduced me to and the Mind Shifter Targeted Journaling Tool, I knew I was the one creating this. That book wasn't making me physically ill. So I embraced this shift in my energy and turned the focus inside and did worksheets and tapping and asked to be shown what this is about. And I got in touch with traumatic energy from my childhood and my being raised as a Catholic, kindergarten, grade school, high school, and college. And when I had done enough work on that, I picked up the book and there was no nausea, and I read through the rest of the book and just loved it and thrilled with it. over and over again, it's suggested that we observe for ourselves how we are creating our experience of life. Over and over again, it's suggested that we ask to be shown something that our five senses cannot show us. Over and over again, we are invited to expand our experience of life. So, 563-999-3581. I just sat up and took a look at the board. Area code 610, you're in the air. Susan?
Hi, Dr. Tim. Sue again. Yep, hi.
Are you able to hear me all right?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I just had this weird thing where at least one number has repeated twice on the switchboard, so I was wondering if we're having technical difficulties. So how can we support you? What's going on?
Well, lots going on. The exercise of turning your palms up and asking and opening the heart is a place in our liturgy. Maybe it's in the Catholic, Roman Catholic liturgy too. Lift up your hearts. We lift them up to the Lord. It is meet and right so to do, or something like that.
It's right to give thanks to the Lord our God.
Yeah. Right. You think I'd know it for all the times we've heard it, and we still hear it.
It's right to give him thanks and praise.
Yeah, right.
You're triggering brain cells.
Oh, that's good. I'm finding this very hard to do, and I like the idea that you can, whatever it said, however it said, Mayor, that you think nothing happened. You think you didn't do anything or nothing is coming to you. That is not true. Just the gesture, the thought, means that something has been done and is being done. That is a saving thing, because with all the chaos of these grandkids, and I'm triggered and triggered and triggered over and over again that with fears about they're not going to be okay, and I go through doing this, and I feel very off balance, but it's just good to have a concrete, physical even, exercise to do. And another thing that's great about it to me is that here we do worksheets, and I've been doing quite a few worksheets. There always appears to be so much more clearing, so much more forgiveness work to be done. This is like a little tiny respite, a little island. It's like a yoga position or something. It's another way of stepping into being okay when things don't feel okay at all. And so that's just one comment. And the other comment I wanted to say about the readings, often in the middle of the night, as I've told you, I'll go back into the archives and listen. And I've listened to lessons 26 and 27 maybe three or four times now. Every time I listen, there's new stuff there, or the chairs have been arranged, and I think, where was I when that was said before? And the other part is, I feel as if the way you've been going through these slowly like this, for me, puts me into a state where it's very hard to push one and talk. It's almost as if on a very deep level, the neurons are being rearranged. I wonder if it's like hypnosis or something. And I bet a lot of the other listeners are having the same experience of being deeply, deeply addressed, where they really want to find peace and solutions, answers, whatever you call it. I don't mean it to be a mind thing particularly. It just feels as if something is being caused to happen. We are allowing something to happen. And here you're chugging along, reading. I shouldn't say chugging, because you do very slowly. It seems as if we could do this radio show and read the lessons till the end of time, and we'd still be learning stuff. So that's sort of three different things to say.
Well, I would encourage you to think about it in terms of just the way you were talking about the exercise in this last lesson that we read about turning the palms heavenward and asking to receive.
That
same kind of thing can happen with any deep teaching that we go to slowly or we go to repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
And so perhaps that's exactly what's happening. Right? That I'm getting more out of it than I realize because I'm getting tapped into this through the ether, so to speak, right? I'm getting tapped into it through a willingness. Yeah.
It feels the way I did some early childhood work years ago, and I got to the point where I couldn't even put words, and then we discovered that partly that might be because the issues originated before words were part of my life. I wasn't talking yet.
That's a fairly common thing.
So listening, you take us into this state. I shut out the world. I just settle in and shut my eyes and let those words go in and in and in. And I bet you everybody else is doing the same. You said you have several people on the call. I think we're all just needing this right now, especially now when the world is sort of turning itself on its ear.
Well, remember, part of the teaching is give up your need to identify with the world as being on its ear or being broken.
Absolutely. I love that.
And just
be
with.
Just read that again today.
Yeah. Be with the understanding that there's a lot more going on here than we can know about. And, you know, basically love is all there is. And so just like when if I do the exercise and, you know, turn my palms heavenward, and I don't seem to get that jolt of juice or electricity or joy or whatever I'm looking for, I don't open my checkbook and find out there's I won the lottery or whatever. That stuff that I'm looking for is not evidence of anything except the egoic mind and processing.
Right.
So this work is telling me that there's a lot more going on here than I can know with my conscious logical mind, and I could choose to just trust that when I ask, it is given, and things are going to start unfolding, not necessarily according to my time frame and not necessarily the way my conscious logical mind says they should.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if I stay with this process of choosing to extend only love, my life will start to improve in ways. I will see down the road. I will see in the next breath. I will see in the next month, year, or decade things that unfolded because I opened and asked. And my conscious logical mind cannot even begin to comprehend.
It's too late to bring this up, but there's a sentence toward the end of one of the paragraphs. It is your descent into complete recognition of your ignorance, a complete recognition of your joy-filled dependence on the corrective power of the Holy Spirit. And I thought to myself, what do you mean joy-filled? I like that sentence, but I thought, joy-filled, that's an expectation. I'm not getting the joy. What the heck is going on? So I go down the tubes again. So what you're saying is, I'm going to excise that little thing as a requirement at the moment and just do it anyway.
Yeah, and my take on that is what they're saying essentially is that when I'm giving myself over to this, it's not subservience. It's mm-hmm. the recognition that as I'm moving myself, Dr. Rice talks about this thing about energy and vibration and aligning yourself and, you know, tapping into the vibration of the Creator, et cetera. There, the ancient Aramaic definition for prayer is to set a trap for God. And when he does that talk, mm-hmm. he talks about getting into that alignment or attunement. That's how I read that, right?
Good.
When I align, there is going mm-hmm. to be a greater joy. It's going to be there. I can't create it with my conscious logical mind.
Right.
Right. I can't demand that it show up now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yet when I do this, when I get into that practice, when I allow, that's what's going to happen. I will experience the energy of creation or love more and more deeply the more I learn to just teach only that energy of love, to extend only that energy of love.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm not experiencing it, it's because there's something in me that's holding on to an attachment to something that's less than that, and that's the only reason.
Yeah, that's good to know, and that is true.
And that's why the worksheet is so valuable, because it says, okay, what is this you're clinging to? What is this that your mind says is your goal, and this has to happen for you to be happy? And let's just cancel that and watch what happens. So, thank you for the call. I don't really know what's going on. There's no Jeannie on the switchboard or Michael or anybody else.
Wow.
Michael's here.
Welcome, Michael.
Hey there,
young
man.
I don't see Jeannie on the switchboard anywhere.
Actually, Michelle is supposed to be joining us today from Mexico to do the switchboard. Jeannie had some errands that she needed to do. So Michelle has said she'll be joining us. So hopefully she'll kick in here any second and we'll be rock and roll.
Well, I don't see a number that looks like Michelle. I have two different 808s, and that traditionally has been Hawaii.
Yes, that's Hawaii. As far as I know, I don't know anybody
I have two of the same number, 808.
Hmm. Oh, that's strange.
And so I don't know if
I don't know how that one happens, but
I'm going to turn on an 808 and just say, "Hello, you're in the air. Who do we have?"
Hi, this is Roma. Can you hear me?
Hi, Roma. Yeah, are you on the switchboard? You want to take over for me so Michael can do the second half of the show?
Oh, gosh,
I can hear you.
I know how to do it. You do it.
I know. I'm just kidding.
We'll be doing that, but we can say hello to Roma.
And your number is on twice. Let me ask something, Roma. Did you click
for
on in the beginning of the hour?
I was listening to the show, and two times it just went to a dial tone. So I don't know why that's happening.
Okay. So we may have some difficulty. All right, I'm going to just mute you for a minute, Roma, so we can get a switch over here. So we might have some technical difficulties that are preventing Michelle from coming on. I have another meeting I'm supposed to be in, Michael, so tell me
go
who you want me to turn on the microphone before I leave. Susan Bingham's already on. We can turn Roma back on.
Sure, let's say hello to both of them, and we'll just proceed and trust that Michelle will show up.
All right.
She has the login, so she should be. She may be running a little late, or who knows. We'll trust that what needs to happen will happen, and we'll just allow it all, as you say, and then align with the highest and best.
All right. Have a great show.
Sweet. Have a blessed one. So, Ms. Roma, how are you?
Oh,
Ms. Susan? Huh?
Hi.
Well, you may or may not have had something on your mind to share, Roma, that Tim logged you in, but here we are getting to say hello. Any thoughts for you?
Well, it's a beautiful morning here, And I'm sitting here on my on the foot of my bed with my hand in the Avicen.
All right.
And, yeah, and the whole back wall is open because part of it is the screen door and part of it is the window. And so I have this beautiful morning experience, this morning light. And there, I have this very unusual plant in my garden that just gets bigger and bigger, and it's exquisitely gorgeous. It's got these beautiful pink little flowers that are about the size of your fist, but they're completely circular. And I don't know, I just am sitting here in paradise.
Sounds like wondrous. Sounds like beauty. We're having,
yeah,
it's like,
absolute,
you know,
beauty, absolute perfection. It's just a, you know, moment-to-moment joy.
Sweet. Well, here we are, you know, November the 8th in Southwest Virginia, and it's 74 degrees, beautiful sunshine. It's crazy, but it's certainly a day to enjoy.
Yeah, beautiful. The astrologers have something to say about this day, however. I mean, it is election day in the United States, and there has been a pattern of strange disruptions and things like that. So.
Well, we'll hold the space. We just get more and more united.
Yeah, yeah.
Get rid of the separation idea.
Nowadays, I just have a big smile on my face most of the time.
Good for you.
You know, I did this work for many, many years, and now, you know, I live in a different reality.
Reaping
in
the rewards.
Yeah, I am. I'm reaping the rewards.
Nice.
After all these.
Sweet. All right. Well, you have a blessed day.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Hello.
And Miss Susan, I know that I had talked with you and you had a question or two from yesterday's show, so maybe we just rock and roll, and I'm sure that if we get our
Michelle?
Switchboard operation going, we'll get a hello from Michelle.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, the talk yesterday with Diane, wonderful. And I don't even know where to begin. You talk about the biggest challenges have provided you with the biggest growing, and then you talked about COVID and how that turned into a tremendous learning experience. And I began to think maybe I should shift my idea of this almost total disorientation over the grandsons and their struggles. Of course, I've been looking at it as an invitation to grow and clear and see them as innocent and hold the loving space. I also feel as if it's almost more than I can handle, and I was wondering why this is not necessary. I don't have to go down the tubes to hold the space for them. So what's going on? And one thing I've been telling myself is that they, especially Jacob, might not be okay. And that is something I told myself when I was 8, when I witnessed my mother thrashing my younger sister with a riding crop. And you've heard this story many times. I was,
right.
Much as I really couldn't stand my sister and, you know, we were fighting all the time, I thought, she's not going to be okay. And that was almost, if it wasn't prediction, you could even say it was a curse, as if I'm that powerful. But all it was a thought, just a thought. Boy, she's not going to make it out of this. And her life hasn't been a life that I don't think she is happy with or proud of. And she has been on kind of on the dole for the rest of her life. And Tim and I have supported her for many years now, because she really basically lies in bed all day doing puzzles and watching TV. And, of course, you could look at that as a complete enabling, too. And here I'm looking at these two grand boys. Luke called the other day and said from his rehab place, an unusual event that they get a phone and can call. he said, Mom, I want to be well. I want to be sober. And my daughter had a kind of a vision. She said the voice of God in the form of a mother's voice said, he's on the road now to get better. And she's holding on to that. But I just hope that's true. I don't have enough.
Well, I'll join you in holding the space for that.
Okay. There's so much. The whole world seems so strange to me because I'm seeing it through this lens of these suffering boys. And I really want to do what you did with, it's like having COVID of the brain or something. I want to have this be another level. You talk about a healing crisis, a healing crisis. I want it to be a healing crisis. I don't even know how to put words to this. Sorry, I feel as if I'm just going on and don't know where my talk is going.
Well, and maybe you don't need to know where it's going. Maybe just the acknowledgement that there's a piece of work for you to do here. And of course, you know, I can, the world of what we call the ego could certainly make it all up that, oh, I have to be in trauma and I have to be sad and afraid and all those things for what's happening to these boys, because in the world's terms, it could end up in tragedy. There's no question about it. And am I energetically of service to them by buying into that? Or if I hold to that space of active present love, I get to do something different. And to do that, of course, as Dr. Tim said, what do I need to do? I need to cancel the goals that keep my mind doing something based in pain and trauma. And I suspect that probably doing some work around what you saw with your sister, it might be, you might be being called to bring that experience forward once again on another level and bring healing to it.
Probably true. I haven't done a worksheet on that. I've done the one many on the boys. Michael, when you say, and this is connected, when you say that you're willing to take on the generations of pain, I know you don't know the specifics of all that. I don't know what that background noise is. It's not coming from me. And it's okay, except is it Romo's phone?
Yeah, I did the same. He did the building.
Let me just see here.
My book is so happy to get out of the box.
Okay.
So we're going to put out the other
one. Are you reading
them
as you put them in?
I'm trying to categorize them, so I'm kind of flipping through. Is this poetry? Is this fiction? What
have
the hell?
Have they all been read by you?
No. No.
Are you still there, Susan?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm not sure what that other, the other voice is that's coming in.
It sounds like you having a conversation with a woman. Is there a tape going or something, a recording?
Not that I know of. I'm not sure if.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good thing he caught me because I was on my way back from Springfield, and he said, "Where are you?"
It sounds. I don't know what to say. Tape playing in the background.
On 60.
So why did he want? He wanted the only one in Lloyd.
Because that's Magda's voice there. I don't know what to say. I'm looking at the switchboard, not being an expert as Jeannie is at operating it.
Pretty darn awesome. I mean, weather forecasts don't mean a whole heck of a lot for us.
Look at all your little whatever those are.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was going to get all those.
Weird.
I don't know what to do. I'm looking at the switchboard, and it sounds like a recording has been started, but I don't know how that could possibly happen. Okay, the voice is gone.
Maybe.
Maybe. Are you still there, Susan? You're there. Okay. Well, let's go ahead as though it stopped. I don't know what to do with it, but it's gone.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have, it's part of the non-being mind, the figuring out mind, I'm sure. When you are taking on the pain of the generations, that doesn't mean you know that Aunt Nellie back in 1642 had a hangnail. I mean, you don't know details. So the clearing happens without knowing stuff.
My take with that is that, and I'm just at this moment going back to the time frame where that was happening, back to the experience of that, and it was like I was hearing the request from them for support and to be a conduit, to be the space where that accumulated pained energy can be transmuted, that it would flow through me to be exposed to love. Remember, the bottom line being that when love is active and present and something less than love shows up, that's where healing happens.
Yeah.
So that I was expressing a willingness to be that space and to allow it to move through me. I'm actually reminded back several years ago, Jeannie and I did a workshop in at a retreat center in Florida, kind of a remote area in Florida, and we didn't find out until after the intensive and started asking questions that this center had actually been a Native American burial ground. And during the still point session, there were two people in particular that were sensitive to the energy that was in the space. And as they were doing still point, they each had more than one Native American come through to them, communicate with them that they were, I guess for want of a better word, they were earthbound. They were stuck there, and they were looking for a conduit to move through back to love. And, and each of them shared that, and you might remember that was, Jeannie shared it, we've talked about it quite a bit over the years, Jeannie had a recall of being a Native American child in that particular still point session, and being a female and being abused by white men. And, I mean, she had great detail in that experience. So the other two people who were asked for permission by these Native Americans to come through them didn't have any details on it. Jeannie had a great deal of detail. And, in fact, she spent several years processing some of the things that were surfaced in that experience. So I think that, you know, if I'm willing to be the space of active present love, and someone has some energy that they're willing to process that they're not able to process on their own, I can volunteer to be that space. I can take on that energy, so to speak. So
how
that's
does
my,
that feel to you? How do you experience that?
I'm just taking a second to just go back to the moments where that was occurring, and I guess it was a combination of, wow, this is like something like I never expected. This is amazing, and it was like there was nothing for me to do in that space. Just to stay there present as love. That's the best, I mean, it's really not something I can particularly put in the, into words, but that's the best I could language it.
Did it involve a lot of time, or was it painful to you? Or
no, there
did
was,
you have
there,
a...
There was only bliss for me in it. There was only, you know, realizing, you know, I'm, and the thing that brought it to awareness, I'm doing a still point session. My eyes are closed, and, you know, my eyes are in kind of a neutral place. And I had the inclination, like I was told, to look down, and that's when I could see this huge, this unfathomable field of darkness with these spots of light in them. And I knew what it was. I can't say that a voice explained it to me. I don't know how to even speak it. It really wasn't something that's I can particularly put into words, but I was in a really connected bliss state. I was in a totally connected, loving state. And I just became aware of that request and gave my permission for it. And I can't, aside from being in that space of bliss or love, I can't put a word to any sensation that happened. It, like even when I said, yes, I'm willing, there was no sensory experience for me in that, aside from what I was feeling when I was asked the question and gave permission. You know, if I think back to my electronic work and my electronic training, you know, a TV antenna happens to be in a certain state of alignment and it brings in channel 2. I don't know that there's any sensation to the antenna when it brings that energy in. It's just, it's aligned for that and, you know, the energy moves through it. And that was my experience, was this energy, it's hard to put into words.
It sounds right, though, what you say.
Oh, it was so right. It was so powerful.
Wow.
And it ties in with what I have shared many times. I think I talked about it in yesterday's show as well. It ties in with that experience where I'm asking, you know, there's a person in the intensive that makes this major breakthrough and everybody else is kind of ho-hum. It's like, what happened? Why was it different for them? What occurred? And what I was shown, what was explained to me, and again, when I say explained, it was just a knowing. It wasn't a voice said, well, here's what's happening, Michael. It was, what is going on here? And a non-audible voice said, when that pure state of being is open, that pure space of active love is open, and something comes out of hiding from the mind, something that's in that dissociated state when it comes forward, the meeting of those two creates a change, a transmutation of energy. And that's, you know, that's the best set of brain cells I've got through which to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be a whole lot more to it, you know, that I don't comprehend or that I don't understand. And I don't know that it's necessary to understand it. For me, it was just to be in the willingness.
I feel as if I'm in the willingness, but boy, oh boy, there's a lot of garbage coming up that keeps me from any sense of bliss or love or well-being. It's been a real struggle, a feeling of, the best word I could say is strangeness. The universe seems strange. My days seem strange. I go for a walk and the world is beautiful. I'm looking at the trees and everything should be right, but I have this feeling of being almost disoriented as if I've never lived here before. I don't know what to make of this. But I love the idea that somehow being willing and doing the work will have results, even though I can't get there directly.
You know, an analogy comes to mind, and that is if we were to have a conversation with a fire, and we said to the fire, what is it like to burn wood? I don't know that the fire would have an explanation. Well, we have oxygen and I have heat and, you know, these molecules break apart and, you know, turn into smoke. And I don't know that there'd be an explanation. It's an energy event. And to me, holding the presence of active love creates a transmutation that is an energetic event, an energy event that I don't know whether or not our intellects have a way to explain, how to even comprehend it.
But
except
it
that it happens.
Like it sounds to me, though, the way in for me seems to be that I decide that I am willing. I open myself as much as I can, but that's a mental thing. I am deciding to do that. I'm using
it,
my
is
brain.
Is it a mental
to do it.
Thing? Is it a mental thing? My experience, when I think back to that ancestor healing process, there's a mental component to it, but to me, it was something that was initiated at a being level, that was initiated beyond my mind. You know, I shared in that conversation, I was thinking about this morning, and I haven't thought about that situation a long time where I was out west and I had that major healing crisis and I'm sitting in a parking lot and I hear what I would say is me, but it didn't come from my mind.
Mm-hmm.
If you recall, I had just watched a video of a woman who had been horribly abused as a child and throughout her life because of scars from being burned in a fire, and it just brought up so much grief in me. And
mm-hmm.
as I breathe through that, I hear what right now I would consider to be myself.
Yeah.
Me, not my mind. And I was thinking about this morning. It's like that wasn't my mind that said that, but what came from me was this anguished cry of, I don't want to be here. I want to go back where we treat each other like human beings.
Yeah.
And it's really clear for me that did not come from my mind.
Mm.
But might I say it came from my soul, it came from my being. It just came from a place in me that I hadn't had a lot of experience with at that time. And so it's hard to put it into words. And I think that making a choice, I think that coming from that space is where choice is rather than decisions in the mind. And when I agree to process that energy, when I get the understanding that I can process something that obviously it's in me because it's genetic, at least what I was shown was it was in my genetic bloodline. So my sense would be it was an energy that was carried within my own structure.
Mm.
But, we don't have brain cells to talk about those things.
But what you're basically saying is it can happen without your
it happens.
Having your brain on board.
Right.
It can happen.
Yeah, it wasn't a mental thing. It
well,
clearly
very
came
reassuring.
From being.
Yeah.
And when my mind gets involved, my mind wants to go, okay, well, what can I do to fix it? But this is beyond the state of what can I do to fix it. I mean, when I was shown that visual and asked that question, there's no way I could even comprehend what it was that I was being asked, aside from was I willing to be the space, was I willing to be of support? And, you know, the beautiful part of the way the universe works is that literally in that experience, and usually when I do a still point session, my phone is off, but I hadn't turned off. It was beside me, and my phone rang. Literally at the moment where I spoke out loud during this still point session, my eyes are closed, but I'm looking down, and I see this field of darkness. I see these flecks of light that I know are my ancestors. And as I breathe into that and I verbally say, yes, I will process that energy of my ancestors, my phone rings and my son is on the phone, and we've never talked about ancestries ever. And Michael J. says, hey, Dad, here are his words when he called, hey, Dad, I'm on ancestry.com and I need some information about some of our ancestors. I'm thinking about signing up for a full account. I'm just kind of exploring it right now. Can you share some of that with me? And it was like, well, you know, I've been around the country with this kid, around the globe with this kid for 42 years, and we've never had a conversation that bears any relationship with this, and here I speak the words to my ancestors, yes, I'm willing to be here to support you, and my son calls and asks a question about ancestry. It's like, that's pretty good verification for me.
Yeah.
So for me, I take it as a fact. Now, somebody else might hear and go, nah, that just sounds flaky, crazy. You're off your rocker, ice. Well, you know, everybody do their thing. But
right.
The experience doesn't get much more real than that one was for me. And my son calling to verify it was just like.
That's so amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it is an amazing thing. So when you had this, you're willing, how has that manifested in your life? Have you heard from, are you doing some processing for ancestors in a different way than you did before, or are there more of them knocking on the door, or what?
Well, interestingly enough, you know, prior to that particular still point session, if I went back and listened to the radio show, there were several shows. I'm not even sure exactly what the time frame was, but over a period of months, I had in particular been doing a lot of work around my father. You know, when I was a kid, had a lot of challenges with Dad. And I had done quite a bit of work in that regard. I have some other cousins that I had communicated with that, you know, that I hung out with when I was a kid, a young person. But actually, since that event, I'm just trying to remember, I don't think there's been anything that's come up around family for me. I'm just, you know, when I think of, you know, things I had processed prior to that, that was like an opening, and I hadn't thought of this until you asked the question. There haven't been any issues for me to look at in that regard over the last
months. Could it be
months
that you're just saying yes, like open the latch?
I believe so.
Just saying yes, somehow.
And it wasn't a yes to. Yeah, it wasn't a yes to some kind of an intellectual process. It was just a yes to, I'll take on the energy. I'll process that energy. I'm here to support you. But I had been doing a fair bit of work around some family issues. Actually, a few months earlier, I'd had a conversation with my sister, who's 4 years older than me. And she brought up how, as a kid, how brutal my father, her word was brutal, he had been with me and unfair.
Wow.
And you know, I had done some serious work around him and my leftover energy around him, but it's been pretty clean since I made that that declaration of willingness to handle generational stuff. It's been pretty clean, which I'm thankful for. I hadn't thought of it, but thanks for bringing that up. It'll be something else for me to do some contemplation on and see if there's anything else for me to look at.
That leads me to a question about you and your dad. Did you trust him? Were you open with him? I mean, if he was brutal with you, you might have shut your heart down around him. Did that happen, or how was it for you?
Well, it's interesting. Some of the main memories that I have, one of the things my parents always did, every summer, my dad took 2 weeks of vacation, and we went to some kind of a vacation place, rented some kind of a cottage on a lake up north, and went on vacation. And one of the main memories that I have of my dad was we were at a cottage, and I can remember he's outside, and I don't know, I think there's maybe horseshoes being pitched, and we're on a lake. And I don't know how, I'm pretty small, but I'm looking at him like I'm looking at a god. And that's one of the main memories I have of my dad. I have processed through some layers of how sometimes he could get pretty brutal with me. I've done a lot of work around that. But that there's nothing in that regard that constitutes any kind of a real memory with me. There is one on the other end of it. Between grade 11 and grade 12 in high school, he worked in a steel mill. And the steel mill had a thing where they would hire high school students that were the children of employees to give them experience in a summer job. And I did that job that summer. Prior to that, I'm not sure how to say it. I guess I'd have to say it was like my dad didn't have much belief in me. That was my take on it. But that summer, you know, and they hired hundreds of students. That summer when all the reports came in, and he actually invented a way of rolling steel. They call it skinny plate, that didn't exist anywhere else in the world. There's one factory in Hamilton, Ontario, rolled this steel called skinny plate, and my dad invented the mill to do that, and he ran that mill. So he was pretty, you know, high up in the chain in that factory, but he was still a company man, you know, for the company type thing. I can remember in his later years when he retired and took six men to take over his job, that I counseled him, Dad, you need to get them. He was just doing it. You know, he's on the phone with them every day trying to help these guys figure out what he'd been doing, you know, developed over a period of 50 years or so. And I remember saying, Dad, you got to charge them. You got to make them pay you for that. You're giving them a lot, and they couldn't run that without you. But he was a company man, and that was it. But when the student reports came in and he got the student reports, they graded students, I guess, and of all the students that were working that summer, my report was the highest of the group. And it was like the first time my father looked at me with eyes of, oh, who are you? You have value?
Oh, my God.
And I can remember at that point I had given up, and it was like I can remember thinking, yeah, thanks, Dad, but too late. You know, too late. Should have done that a long time ago. And I kind of already had my own direction set. I was working. I'd started to work in the electronic field, and he wanted me to accept. They had made an offer for me to go, and they'd pay for more education and to go into my high school training was in electronics and physics, and they wanted me to, you know, hire on. And he did not understand why I didn't take that job, because it was, you know, compared to what I did do, it was much, much more money for half the hours. He just didn't understand it. But I actually learned something really important that one summer in that steel mill, and that was I am never going to punch a clock again. I may work twice as many hours, you know, doing something else, but I'm never going to punch a clock again, and I never have.
Wow, what a great thing to learn.
That was a very important piece of learning for me as a kid. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I did that job and I worked hard at it and I, you know, I was rewarded for it. And I learned that really well. Never, ever, ever will I punch a clock.
Could you translate your distance from your father as that you closed your heart to him? Could you ever put it that way?
Yeah, that would probably be accurate. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And did that impact relationships with other? He was a same-sex person, sort of like my mother. I remember never, even though I adored my mother, absolutely adored her, I never trusted her, and I never confided in her ever, even though she really wanted to talk to me later on. It wasn't even a decision I felt I could make. I was just gone.
Yeah,
and
well,
I've
that was kind of when
that,
he invited me back. When he, you know, started
yeah.
to acknowledge me, it was like, too late. You know, I'm out of here. I'm already on my path.
Yeah. Right.
Interesting things to review.
No kidding. Amazing. I wonder where he is now. Like my mother, I often wonder, Mom, are you in a state of consciousness where you can look back on what happened when we were together on the planet? And I know she regretted how she treated us smallest two girls. But
yeah.
I would really love, and I'm sorry I missed the chance. And she opened the door a couple of times, but I was too afraid to go near there. I thought it would end
right.
badly somehow. So I regret that. I know I could probably talk to her now. I have a little bit, but, you know, this is bringing it into focus. Somehow I feel as if this might be related to all the stuff, other stuff. Because maybe there's still hope even when the body isn't available, you know. For
being is still there. I know that many times I have wished in doing this work that my dad were around, that I could have shared it with him. He left,
yeah.
44, 45 years ago. And
wow.
many times as I got into this work, and especially as I was teaching, I've been like, oh, God, I wish he were around. I wish I could share this with him. If he could just see
he
could have unloaded so many burdens.
Would he have been open to it, do you think?
I don't know. I can fantasize that he would. I don't know whether he would or not.
Yeah.
I think I became... I don't know what the word is, educated enough in it to be able to explain in a way that he probably would have gotten it, but who knows?
So interesting. Because this is amazing. Because I've pictured my mother would only say, oh, good grief, navel watching. Why are you thinking about yourself so much? It would have been a real issue with her. So.
Right. Well, I hold the space for, you know, this opens for me a set of thoughts of, so let's join in holding the space on another level for all of our ancestors, for everybody who's listening, for all of our ancestors
yeah.
to be able to tap. And, you know, I think about that experience that Magda had with her, I believe it was her great-grandfather.
Yeah.
in her work and how powerful that was. And, you know, I think the more that each of us opens to create a space of healing with our ancestors, the more everybody on the planet is going to have an opportunity to bring healing to areas of life that the world has not ever even thought about, let alone
yeah.
engaged in. So,
Michael, what's happening with the switchboard? Is Michelle on, or?
As far as I know, no. No, it's us. And I don't know, maybe Michelle being in Mexico had trouble getting in or something.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, let's join in.
I
can, yeah. Jeannie opened the switchboard before I came in, before she left. So the switchboard is open on her computer. That's why I came in to see if I could do anything with it. But Celinda was on there, but she's put her hand down and disconnected. So.
Oh, too bad.
But ancestors, let's join in bringing healing to ancestors. That's, to me, that feels like a really important opening, a significant opening. Just to take it to a new level. And I certainly open the deepest willingness that I can find.
I had this fantasy that you, seeing all those specks of light, that as soon as you said yes, they were all going to line up and be knocking on your door and you were going to be swamped.
No, actually it was, it was just a moment of bliss and a moment of connectedness and knowing. And I guess just stepping into another level of processing.
Well,
it's
that
like,
makes
sense. I don't have words. Don't have words to describe it.
And we are all connected. I wasn't thinking about that, but you, in doing your work, you're probably healing them. Just like it goes backwards or into the ozone or something. So
that would be my take exactly. That would be my take exactly, yes. So on every level where we can have cognitive awareness and every level of energy where perhaps we don't have cognitive awareness, I certainly express willingness and joining in, the course talks about joining others in and how that strengthens the energy patterns that we can generate and the energy we can create. So I certainly open the space for joining in that on another level and invite any awareness that's possible to come forward for each of us that we can, maybe open this awareness, this understanding on another level. And who knows what we get taught next.
Michael?
I'm certainly willing to be taught. Oh, hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Hey, I had a break at 1, and I went outside. I changed my bathing suit because I thought, well, I'm going to meditate for a little while before I have to work again. And I'm like 5 minutes into it, and I'm like, is today Tuesday? Oh, wait, what time is it? Because I'm on Central Time, and I had to convert. And I'm like, oh, my. So I ran up here and hopped on and apologized for just totally spacing on being available to open the show with you at 1. But it sounds like something good was happening with you, Michael.
Michelle, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you great, Susan. I'm not sure. Maybe Michael touched me or something. You guys were talking about something from Course.
We were talking for a long time. It was very nice. But I'm glad you're on, but now I don't know where Michael went.
Oh, I'm here.
Oh, good.
I am here loud and clear, and welcome, Michelle. I understand how spacing out happens. Been there, done that a few times. So tell us where you are in Mexico and how you're doing.
Oh, I'm doing well. I am in a part of Mexico near Guadalajara that claims the biggest freshwater lake in Mexico called Lake Chapala. And there's a lot of expats, you know, quite a few English-speaking Mexican people, like, supporting the community. So I, you know, closed my office during the pandemic and realized working from home didn't mean working from my house. And so connected with the house sitting, and I've just been bouncing from lovely homes, you know, from a week to 3 months long at a time, and as long as you have good internet, I'm yours. And so it's just a nice part of the country. It was named, National Geographic named it the second best climate in the world in 2019 because of the high elevation. The nights are really cool,
right,
and no humidity, and 85-degree, 90-degree days. So it's pretty wonderful. Actually, last year when I first came back to Michigan, and I saw a black sky thunderstorming for the first time in 9 months. When I first looked at it, I didn't know what I was looking at, and I got really terrified. And then the part of my brain goes, "Oh, that was a thunderstorm. Remember those?" It was pretty funny. So, you know, it just
shocked you, eh?
The clients are, it's interesting how brutal Michigan is for a human and what you have to go through. And you really don't have that perspective until you spend a significant time outside of it. And, you know, it's usually something that most people talk about as part of their, like, daily, you know, disclosure, because, you know, adjusting to the freezing cold or the wet or gloomy and all this kind of stuff. And it takes a toll, and you don't really appreciate it until you're away from it. You lived in Florida. You know what this is.
Well, I can remember the first time I went to Florida, and it was actually Christmas. And I went to visit my mother. She had bought a mobile home, a double-wide, you know, home-type home in Florida. And was going there for the winter, and I went down with her. And Christmas Eve, we got on bicycles in our bathing suits and went down to the pool and went for a swim. And I can remember thinking, I could do this. I like this. There's a place. You know, I mean, of course, all my life I knew there was a place called Florida. I knew there was a place that had no winter, but the experience of it is a little different. And it didn't take long for me to get out of Dodge and move south. So I can relate to that fully.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think, you know, things are going well. I'm going to be coming back to Michigan in a couple of weeks. I'm actually traveling on Thanksgiving Day. I figure that's going to be smooth sailing, least expensive. And no disruption in my client's schedule. So
cool.
My son will meet me at the airport for dinner, and we'll transition back for a little bit. I don't know what this winter brings, but I've been working.
Well, we'll hold the space, and it's awesome.
Yeah, no, it is. There's this doctor who wrote a book about reconstructing anxiety. I think I sent you an email. I know you've been traveling and visiting, so maybe not up on emails. And he studied all over the world with different religious disciplines and monks and things like this. And
right.
studied A Course in Miracles, and he's a PhD, and so he, I think, kind of identified some strategies to get to people's core fears and then their chief defenses, and how to use strategies to heal. And, you know, touches on the mental, emotional, and physical aspects of, like, holding trauma and what you need to do to release it and integrating those three things. And so the reason I'm mentioning is it just dovetails forgiveness work so well and just, like, expands my ability to language some things, you know, from multiple avenues. And so he had a group of people that was meeting weekly for, like, a coaching session, and I realized, or I thought it was, like, going to be other clinicians and maybe learning how to learn the techniques and apply them and that kind of thing. And so I joined it, and then I realized it was more like group therapy. There wasn't clinicians. It was lay people and, like, who had anxiety were using his model and practicing it. So now, I mean, it's good to, like, maybe learn. I feel like my skill set might be a little above most of the people in the group. So I find myself, like, trying to hold back being a facilitator because some of the stuff they're saying is, like, you know, I want to help them massage it a little bit, but it isn't necessarily my role because I don't know enough about how to use his work yet. But it is interesting, and so it's just been a good experience to look deeper at fears that I'm still holding that, you know, just hidden layers and a different way to chip at them and, like, add it to my all of the above. So that's been pretty cool because, like, I'm like,
sweet.
Wait a second, now I'm in group therapy every week. What the hell? So I noticed right away I was a lot more gentle with my clients the following week. Like, oh, it's okay. Yeah, you can hold on to that a little bit. Don't push yourself because now I'm in the hot seat, and, you know, it's always good. Going on with me.
Michael.
Hold the space for a wonderful return home and time with your kids. Thanksgiving, that's sweet. Well, anything else to share at this moment, young lady?
No, I'm complete. I'm glad I was able to remember it all and pop in here.
Awesome. Well, very cool. Well, we're down to the last minute or so. So I'm going to just say thank you for joining us and thank everybody for the conversation. Susan, I'm certainly delighted for the space you opened up on the idea of let's go for it on the next level with ancestors. That was part of our conversation, was opening the space for the healing of ancestral issues and the willingness to take that on at another level. I don't know how much of that part of the conversation you heard, Michelle, but that's where we'd be going. And everybody, we hold space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. You have the ability to give it. The world needs it. And so it's definitely time to move things forward. Have a blessed one. Bye-bye.
Had you
the
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.